soon to be Johns Hopkins. This is joint work with Mark Vanderlaan at Berkeley. And I'll be talking about estimating the parameter of a marginal structural model using targeted maximum likelihood. It's a little bit, so in the abstract, in the list of abstracts of what people would talk about, I said I would talk about two things, but I'll just focus on the first one, which is this using implementing targeted maximum likelihood and some of the theoretical stuff for the case of marginal structural models. And the talk will go from the very specific, so I'll try to give, I'll give the overview of targeted maximum likelihood first in a couple slides, then go to a very simple example of targeted maximum likelihood for estimating marginal causal effect, just to get a feel for exactly what is this updating step consist of. Then I'll talk about more general case of the targeted maximum likelihood estimator for the parameter of a marginal structural model. And then I'll get connect that in the most general framework to what Mark was talking about on Monday for generalizing from maximum likelihood to arbitrary loss functions. So the overview of targeted maximum likelihood. So and just to be specific on what I've done and what others have done, this is Mark Vanderlaan and Daniel Rubin have developed this general targeted maximum likelihood methodology. I've worked on a component of it on the application, some theory and applications for estimating marginal structural models. But the global is their ideas. I've just worked on developing proofs and some applications in some cases. So it's targeted maximum likelihood is a versatile tool for estimating parameters, quite general class of parameters. So for example, the effect of static or dynamic treatments, for example, on a survival time, estimating direct or indirect effects, estimating parameters of marginal structural models, structural nested models, and can be used for point treatment or longitudinal data. You can have data with censoring, missingness. And a few of the properties of this estimator that you get doubly robust, locally efficient estimation for pathwise differential parameters. And there, you can also look at pathwise, non-pathwise differential parameters, but and get theorems there too. But I'll focus on pathwise differentiable, and should be differentiable. And the output that you get, so this algorithm takes some data, and outputs an estimator for the part of the data generating distribution that's relevant for the parameter of interest. So you may have a parameter that doesn't depend on a lot of parts of the overall density of your data, and it's what you get out in the most general case. You could say you get out a full density for all, for the entire, for all of the data, for the all the variables that you have. But really, what you're going to be updating is just a part of the density that's relevant for the parameter you care about. And one sort of a, at the end, you're getting a solution to the efficient influence curve estimating equation. And I'll talk about why, heuristically, why you're getting that. So the algorithm, in a global sense, is you start off with some parameter, say it's a marginal causal effect or a parameter of some of a marginal structural model. And the target maximum likelihood estimator defines a map from some initial estimator that could be generated any way you like. And it maps it into an update, this P star. And the way that update of the density works, and then the final output is a substitution estimator for whatever parameter psi you care about. You evaluate it at this your final density, P star. So for example, well, I'll give examples in a minute. And so all the work is involved in defining this map. How does this map, how do you go from the initial estimator to the updated version? And this is the, sometimes referred to as the bias reduction step. And it's more or less two steps that are iterated. The first step is to create a parametric model that has a few properties. First, it should contain your initial density estimator, P0, that should be in it. And you want the score at P0. So this is, I'm thinking about when I write this here, as a one-dimensional model. So you can, that's the simplest case. You have a one-dimensional model through P0, where the score at P0 gives you the efficient influence curve for the parameter you care about at P0. Now, more generally, all you need is you can have a bigger model than one-dimensional, if you like. You can have a parametric model that has to contain P0, for which the tangent space of scores through P0 contains all the components of the efficient influence curve. That's a more general, but it's easier maybe to think about it as just, this is consistent with the example I'll give, as just a one-dimensional parametric model, so indexed by some one parameter epsilon, that goes through your initial density estimator, and that has, and is a sense, a hardest submodel in that the score gives you the efficient influence curve at P0. I'll give an example of that in a minute. And so find the maximum likelihood estimator from your data here in this model, and that's your update P star. And then you iterate. So now replace your, you start off with some sort of arbitrarily chosen, or there's some smart ways to do it. That's what Mark was talking about more on Monday. But now replace P0, your initial estimator, with P star that you found. Find another model through that, the sort of hardest submodel, and move in that direction, and repeat until you converge, until your step is negligible in the model. And usually this takes, in practice anyway, it takes 4 or 5 steps. And in a lot of cases, you're guaranteed, a priori, just you can analytically show that it'll just one step, you're done. After you get P star, you try again, and actually, you're already at the maximum likelihood estimator for your model.
Are you, since I've never understood.
Yeah, please ask. No.
Okay.
No. You have to make assumptions that will guarantee convergence. So it's a similar assumptions to what you would make. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say something very general, but for example, for a marginal structural model, if you're estimating the parameter of that, similar assumptions that will guarantee things about a doubly robust estimator. You're having to make some assumptions there. And under those similar set of assumptions, you do get guaranteed convergence. I'll give an example where you get it. But in general, no. You need conditions to ensure. Yeah?
Convergence in finite samples of the algorithm.
That's
convergence of this algorithm in finite samples.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what that
is.
Sorry.
Is there a unique solution, or might there be more than one solution depending on the zero?
Right. So in general, you can set it up so that you'll always have a unique solution. You can use models. So you want to specify what your models will be before you even get any data. And you'll set it up so that there will be a unique solution. But in general, if you allow arbitrary M, there could be multiple maxima. And actually, there's another advantage of this approach is that, you can use the log likelihood to choose between, if you have local maxima anyway, you have a way to choose between them. Just take the one with the larger likelihood. If you have exactly the two global maxima that are the same, yeah, you're stuck there. Yeah.
Is there anything conceptual similar to like the EM algorithm?
It has these two steps you're updating. I'm not sure. That's a good question. Let me give a simple example to make it all concrete. Say you take, this is kind of what we've been talking about all week. You have a situation where you have baseline variables W, a treatment A, and an outcome Y, and you have some parameter. So for example, the mean, the treatment specific mean. So you want to know what you care about is the mean, or say the probability that y equals 1, given treatment A is 1, and some baseline variable is W, and average that with respect to the marginal distribution of W. So say this is what you're going for. And I call it a simple example. I mean, here, there are many estimators for this, and this is not sort of showing off, in a sense, how general the target maximum likelihood estimator is, but it gives just a feeling for things. So here's the algorithm, just what I had on the previous slide, but for this example. So first you get an initial estimator for the full density. So for example, you could estimate the probability of y equals 1 given AW, and the probability of A given W. Use some kind of regression. In particular, use a logistic regression, say, for this one. And then you can estimate the density of W using the empirical distribution. So you get your initial estimates, but you could really do it any way. Then the real meat, the work here is creating the parametric model through the density you have here, where the score at P0 is the efficient influence curve at P0. And then you get the maximum likelihood estimator in this model, and you'll iterate until convergence. And then your final estimator is a plug-in estimator, your final density, you evaluate the parameter at the final density. So what does this actually look like? The main work, as I was saying, is how do you construct this parametric model, this fluctuation, through P0. So for the above, actually, it suffices to fluctuate. You can have a model that only is changing the probability that Y is 1 given AW. You don't have to fluctuate the other parts. In general, you could. You have the option to. But here it suffices to satisfy this, that you only fluctuate this part. So say your original regression fit for the probability Y is 1 given treatment A and based on variables W, say it's this was your fit. You did a logistic regression with main terms and an interaction. There should be a W here, not a V. And you got your regression fit where beta 0 hat, beta 1 hat, beta 2 hat, and beta 3 hat. That was your initial fit. You can define a model, a one-dimensional model, through this, parameterized by epsilon, as the probability of Y is 1 given A and W as a function for epsilon as the same thing, but now you add in one covariate that has coefficient epsilon. In this case, it's A treatment divided by the probability of A given W. Again, these Vs should be Ws here. Sorry for that. And you can see we satisfy the two goals that we have. The first was that this model should go through. It should contain P0. And if you set epsilon equals 0, this goes away, and you get back what you started with. So it contains the your original density. And if you look at the score here, then it gives you the efficient score. Now, actually, to be very careful, it gives you a component of the efficient score here. You're leaving off one component. And you really what you need is an additional fluctuation of the marginal of W to get the full thing. But you can show that, in this case, you don't need that. It's unnecessary. That's kind of an extra argument. You show that when you add a certain fluctuation, you're guaranteed that the epsilon for that one is 0. You can essentially ignore it. But I think it's clearer to skip over that and just say, here you get the important component of the efficient influence curve at P0 when you take the score of this model. So those are the two criteria you need. And this has been worked out for many different examples, and I'll give some papers at the end, that have fluctuations similar to this that involve just adding a covariate to your model that you started with that give you this property here. And I mean, I worked on verifying it for the case of marginal structural model. Yeah, no, I'm not saying. You're right.
The worst possible estimator, doubly robust estimator in the world. And so, because there's often a hint, the way Mark talks, that there's some magic to this. But there are millions of doubly robust estimators.
Sure, of course.
It turns out in finite samples, when P of A given W is bad, this is like the worst one of hundreds that people have looked at.
So because it has huge variance, it blows up. So you're saying when the models are misspecified and you have potentially this guy for some values of W, this will be very, very small. So you have a huge, you have a variance that's enormous compared to lots of other models.
Right, and what you do is you're going to extrapolate because...
Exactly. And so when your model's wrong, you're going to get hit really hard, yeah.
Treatment, as if they did have treatment, you get this huge extrapolation. It's terrible. So
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And actually, so there's Marshall Joffe's estimator, for example, which does much better, this weighted least squares. There's no argument there. I'm not saying here's one you should use. I'm just giving an example with trying to pare down and get rid of all any complexities or of how you would actually do this, just to try to demonstrate the idea behind it in the simplest example. What you might do is truncate. You do some kind of truncation for the weights to control that variance blow up. And you can use some kind of penalized log likelihood, not just log likelihood. So in practice, you would want to do something. I'm not saying you should do this, because you're right. When you compare, that doesn't make sense. And of course, I'm not saying this estimator will beat all other estimators. There's no way you can prove theorems in general like that. So it depends on the truth. But this is just to give an example. But no, I certainly agree with that. Are there any? So in the end, if you're a practitioner and you're actually doing this, all it involves, at least in this oversimplified case, is taking your initial logistic regression fit, adding one more covariate, and refitting. Now, you don't, just to be clear, you don't refit these betas. So you did your initial fit. You got estimates for beta 0 through beta 3. Those are fixed. Those don't change in this update step. The only thing that's fluctuating here is the epsilon. So this is, all these betas are fixed when you run this regression. So you can use, for example, use an offset to implement that. So just one line of code, but that's an important distinction in the algorithm, because you get a different answer if you refit these here. And actually, and this allows for, the reason you might want to do this is it allows for the generalization where you have some machine learning algorithm, something much more complex than just a fit, to get what's going on here. Then you don't have to redo it. You just keep what you got from the machine learning fit and do this one fluctuation. So in the end, you're just adding, you do your initial regression, treat these coefficients now as fixed, and what's in here is an offset, and just do one more logistic regression with an additional variable.
But there's no reason not to refit
them. In this case,
If you have a bigger model, there are more truths where you're doubly wrong.
Okay, it's a trade-off, but
when you iterate, it's good to do it greedy, but
in this case, yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, that's right. It's just a feature of the algorithm, more globally, is you want to keep that fixed, and that allows you some more freedom and things. But here, yeah, it doesn't matter. Let's see. So estimation of the parameter of marginal structural model. These are models that Jamie came up with a while back. And so this is a generalization of what we had before. So the variables this time, I'll talk about Y sub A, this counterfactual, which is it's a set of potential outcomes, the treatment-specific outcome that we would have observed if the subject had been assigned treatment A, and we'd like to know something about, say, the mean of that, we'll talk about the conditional mean given some other variables. W, again, are based on variables. V is a subset of W that we care about. And I'll give an example, but so V are just some of these baseline variables, and the other ones are potential confounders we want to adjust for. A is the treatment that was received, and we get, this is just standard missing data structure, that what we observe are the baseline variables, the treatment received, and the outcome at the treatment received. And we want to estimate, in this case, the probability that if we assign treatment A, the probability that the outcome would be 1, conditioned on these variables V that we care about. And the example that, so I did this analysis, where Y sub A is, so it's a, this is in a cohort called the REACH cohort of HIV positive homeless in San Francisco. And we're interested in looking at what is the effect of different adherence levels, how often people are taking their antiretroviral medications, the effect of percent adherence on the probability of having a jump in viral load. So there's a threshold, here's 50 copies per milliliter. We want to know how does adherence, how much one takes one's drug, influence the probability of jumping. You think less, you take it less, you might have a higher probability of jumping. but conditioned on V, and V is the duration of past suppression. So how many months in a row one has been suppressed, and then you're trying to say, well, is it still as important, given someone's been suppressed for a long time, to take medication at a very high level, 95% of the time? Or at least is the risk of having a jump in viral load less than for someone who just had their viral load suppressed? So that's what we're looking at. So here, and W includes V and some other things, other confounders of treatment assignment, like CD4 count, regimen type, other things that are available to the doctor in making that decision. It's not the doctor making the decision. Here it's things that are potentially impacting the adherence, someone's adherence. So you have depression, you have drug use, all these other factors that are maybe related to jump in viral load and also adherence for somebody. So estimation. So what we really want is this, the probability of Y at a specific treatment, say 100% adherence or 95% adherence, probability of a jump at that level, condition on how many months one has been suppressed so far. And we'd like the whole response curve, ideally. So for every level of adherence, what happens? And also condition on every number of months suppressed. So that's can be hard to estimate that whole curve given finite sample of data. And so we use a working model to approximate that curve, or something we hope, anyway, might be close to that curve. So for example, a logistic model. And we don't make an assumption that that model is correct. So we know that won't be anywhere near correct. We hope it is. And our parameter of interest is the projection of the true causal response curve onto the model. So it's the minimum of the expected value where we have some potentially put some weights there, these H, of the L2 distance between what we care about and the model. So you can think about that as a projection with weights onto the working model. So really what we care, we're being less ambitious, not going for getting exactly this, but getting the projection onto the model. Just like in regression, you're caring about the projection of the true function onto some linear model. So we want this beta star, actually. And to be able to estimate something like this, we need to make the classic assumptions I've been talked about already this week. The randomization, consistency, positivity is key. And under these assumptions, we can represent the parameter we care about in terms of just the observed data. And so how do we actually estimate the parameter of this marginal structural model using targeted maximum likelihood? So the algorithm for getting after that argman, the beta star, is first get an initial estimator for the density, for the full density here. And the variables are baseline variables. A is the adherence, Y is whether one had a jump on viral load or not. And so we can do similar to what I had before for the simpler case. We can model the probability of Y given A and W and the probability of A given W using some kind of regression, say logistic regression, and then someone didn't like that. and model P0 of W by the empirical. I mean, that's one choice you could use. And again, we want to create a parametric model through this P0 where the tangent space of scores at P0 contains the components of the efficient influence curve. And then get the maximum likelihood estimator under that model and then iterate. So it turns out that again, in this case, and this is true, I'm showing this because it's true in general that Mark and others have worked out what additional single covariate can be added to carry out that step. So, I mean, there's a general way that one can always come up with a model. There are many, many ways, in fact, to come up with models here, fluctuations that satisfy these conditions. But often there's a very simple way to do it, And that's an advantage of target maximum likelihood being having often a very simple implementation using standard regression software. And in this case, it suffices to add a covariate to the logistic regression for the probability of Y is one given A and W. Just add this, which is, so it depends on the weights. The weights go back to how we originally defined the parameter we care about, this projection. And often one might use stabilizing weights. That's one choice. So you take, it involves weights. It involves the terms in the model. So if the model M here, marginal structural model, is linear, then it's just, this is just a stack, a vector with all the terms in it in the model. And then here is the inverse weight. So this covariate is added to the regression, just like in the previous case. All the other coefficients are fixed. And one does maximum likelihood to get an update, P star. So we start with P0 of Y given AW. That was the original fit based on logistic regression. Now adding this covariate, we get a new fit, P star. And it turns out we get convergence guaranteed in one step here. So you don't actually have to iterate if you're using this covariate. And then you can convert this into an estimate of the beta star that we were originally going for, just carrying out the projection onto the model. You can also implement that with just doing a weighted regression. I won't talk about that. And in addition, one could use truncation. One can do much more. I mean, do some sensible things, but this is, a simplified example of how it works. So lastly, I'll talk about the generalization of all of this and connect it to Mark's talk from Monday. So you can generalize from just talking about maximizing a likelihood to optimizing or minimizing some loss function. And in this more general setting, the user pre-specifies, again, some parameter you care about, some psi, some q, which is a part of the data-generating distribution that determines psi. So in the previous examples, special case of this, we had that the things determining your parameter were just these two components of the likelihood. So we have Q, part of the data generating distribution that determines psi, and that's what we'll try to do a good job on estimating. A loss function, L, which in the previous cases was minus the log likelihood, but you could do something much more general than that. You could add a penalization term. Feel free to use whatever loss function you think is will help you in the problem you're working on. And for each Q, and nuisance parameter G, so this will be something that's talking about the rest of the distribution. And a parametric model, Q. A parametric model, QG epsilon, so this is a fluctuation through Q, and indexed by G, so depending on your nuisance parameter, you might have different models, that satisfies this equation. So this is a generalization of what we had before. So this is the derivative of the loss function at QG epsilon and PN being the empirical distribution. Derivative at zero should be the efficient influence curve evaluated at Q and G and the empirical mean of that. And in the previous cases, L was a log likelihood. And in the limit, you satisfy this. Well, at each step, you're satisfying this, and in the end, you're getting that this equals zero. That's the feature of this algorithm, that once your epsilon fluctuation is nothing, or very, very tiny, then this is zero, or very tiny. Yeah.
Before, after you did this step, can you go back a couple slides?
Yeah. To get beta star?
Why do I have? Yeah, because I thought you just told me at the end I was solving efficient influence function. So why do I have to go and do some other projection?
To get Betastar out of it. So it's because you're not explicitly. Sorry, you're saying that you can write.
When you assume the model's true, obviously you don't have to do this step. So I'm trying to understand it.
Sure.
So you're solving at the last step the likelihood equation.
Yeah, it happens to have the property that it solves Pn of the efficient influence curve, evaluated at your. I guess here it's. P star is zero. There's no beta, actually, in this one. This is just P star is the whole density. And this is a nice feature in that when there are problems where you can't write, where the efficient influence curve is not a function that you can write as some function of Q, G, and the parameter you care about, where it's depending on this, non-trivially, there are situations where you don't have this, then you're limited. So this one can be useful. I didn't say that very clearly. There's this generalized version of the whole algorithm, which is starting with initial estimates for Q and G, you just iterate, doing the minimization step, minimizing loss, which is equivalent to maximizing log likelihood in the special case of L as the minus log likelihood. You find the optimal epsilon and then update Q to be QG at that optimal epsilon, and then you iterate. So it's just the same thing, just more general. You don't have to use log likelihood as your global criterion. And then just some caveats on that. Your selection of the initial estimator Q0 for the density, or the part that you care about anyway, for your parameter of the density, can be based on a machine learning approach. For example, you can use some penalized log likelihood function to try to get a good Q0 to start with. And then your selection of the clever covariate, or really the way you do this map from Q0 to Q star, can be somewhat complicated. I shouldn't say it that way, but you can do. You're really free to do many things. So for example, Mark has proposed, as nothing I've worked on myself, but Mark and others have proposed this collaborative targeted maximum likelihood estimation where in doing this updating step, one iterates this until convergence, but doesn't stop there. One takes another potential G and augments, takes the Q that came out of here, the Q star, G that one got at the end, augments with another G and keeps going, targets more and then decides how far to go, how many Gs to add on using cross-validation. So you can do, it's not the purpose of this talk to get into that, you can do many more things, essentially. So this, using some of these ideas, you can develop algorithms such as the collaborative targeted maximum likelihood algorithm. So just to conclude, targeted maximum likelihood estimation is a versatile tool for many types of estimation problems, and you often can be simply implemented using standard regression software with a clever covariate, where the covariate depends on the parameter one's trying to get after, the model, and it's been worked out for many cases of interest. And so I'll give some, there's some papers that list some of these models and how to do this here. And that's it.
Any last questions? So in the marginal structural model example, what is the double robustness property? What are the two models at which you only need to get one of them right to get your parameter?
Right, so that's a great question. The let's see. So your initial estimate here. So you'll get this estimate potentially from some parametric model. That's one way to do it, this is sometimes called a Q factor, and this is the G factor. And so as long as you're getting one of those estimated at root n rate than correctly at root n rate, then you're, that's a double robust. So it's really, I mean, it's, that will is sufficient. I mean, it's also if whatever comes out of here has that property, but it's, so that's the double robustness, that you have to get at least one of those right to have consistency. Yeah, so this is the next thing that I'm working on this now. So, but to be honest, I haven't done it yet. So I can't say, I can't tell you anything. But yeah, that's, I mean, all of this generalizes to time-dependent case or longitudinal. And but there hasn't, I don't think, I mean, I certainly haven't, but I'm not sure if it's been done in general. But it's, but that's essentially the step that's going on now. So yeah, that's a very good question. How does it work in that case?